Yes, what I wanted to do was to actually talk about the Buddha. It's partly for a number of reasons, but to talk about the Buddha, to also mention Dr. Ambedkar, and then also to say something about our Sangha in India. Although Banti has ranged far and wide in his presentation of Buddhism, he's always exhorting us to come back to the life of the Buddha. And I wanted to rejoice in the activity and practice of Buddhanusati, recollection of the Buddha. And I want to do this because the Buddha is our unifying force and our mythic dimension and what connects us with our Indian order in particular. I also want to do it because Ambedkar himself had a strong personal feeling for the Buddha. And in his work, which was published posthumously, The Buddha and His Dhamma, the very last verse in that work is an adapted prayer from Vasubandhu, where it says it's a prayer for the Buddha to be reborn in his native land. And that strong feeling is also present in the followers of Ambedkar. And I was just checking with Karan Ashura, who's here this morning. He's just sitting down here. When we were at Bodh Gaya on the convention last year, he told me how he had been there with thousands of others in the 90s. They just turned up to protest at the Hindu control of the Bodhi temple. And they just had to sleep on the streets and just do this kind of direct action. I also want to talk about the Buddha because a large proportion of our order take up the Shakyamuni practice at the time of ordination. And so it's like the Buddha is very much alive in our Indian order. It's also just in itself, Buddhanusati is a very beautiful and simple practice. And I think it's a practice that we can all benefit from doing. I find it a bit like a visualization of the refuge tree. I find it's a practice that just helps to put everything in perspective. And I find this myself just in the work that I've been doing with the India Dhamma Trust and also just my work at Padmaloka and other things. And probably for quite a lot of us, most of my day seems to be taken up with Google Mail and Microsoft Excel spreadsheets and that kind of thing. And there's something about bringing the Buddha to mind. It's as though all of the detail, and I think this is true for wider in the order as well, all the detail that we do, all the discussions about decision making and so on, they're all important, and yet I feel their importance is in relation to some bigger myth, and that's what I feel I need to keep in mind. And I feel that as long as we're doing this practice, everything will be all right. So Padmavajra, who's my preceptor, he's been introducing this practice recently, and he introduces it like meditation, so as if you're sitting with the Buddha. I find myself that I've been doing it more like a reflection practice, where I ask myself a series of questions. And some examples, like, I think, what can it possibly be like to have this kind of consciousness? What can it be like just to sit with the Buddha? What would it be like to sort of see him? And the one that is most perplexing me at the moment is what is meant by the deathless. And just to make this link with India, I want to share with you a kind of an image or a scene that when I spent a year working with Subhuti, and one of the trips we did was in Chhattisgarh, which Vishvapani, who was travelling with us, described as the back end of the back of beyond. It's just this beautiful state, but seemingly far away from anywhere. And, I mean, probably quite a few of you have been to India at one time or another. There is that kind of intensity when you arrive there, intensity of contact with people, especially if you're in towns and cities. And it felt to me like that had been going on for weeks. And then finally, we were in this, in Chhattisgarh, we're travelling between two different villages or towns, and we stopped somewhere by a lake, right out in the middle of the sort of country and fields. And I had about an hour, finally, it felt like, to myself, and I walked out just across the fields, and there were these groves of trees, and I just headed for one. And suddenly I was reminded of this passage in the Mahaparinibbana Sutta where the Buddha describes these groves of trees, shady groves, pleasant places to rest and dwell, where local nature spirits reside. And I felt like I was suddenly inhabiting this scene, as it were. And I wanted to mention that particular image. I mean, it stayed with me. It's a vivid image that it's sort of like that is the scene in which I locate my reflection practice of Buddha Anusati. But also on that same trip, we were going to all these different villages and towns, and wherever we went, we would find a statue of Dr. Ambedkar. And I had no idea that there were so many of them, that there was such great feeling in the villages for Ambedkar. And the statues, they often took the same form, which is a standing figure dressed in a suit, a tie, those big, round, thick black glasses that you often see in photos of them, clasping a book, which is the constitution, the Indian constitution, sometimes pointing, which I think to the parliament in Delhi, and often a face painted a very bright pink, not to my taste, often with garlands, sometimes just faded garlands from previous, you know, garlanding, sometimes fresh, and we would always stop and garland if we had them. And that, seeing all of those images of Ambedkar and something that Subhuti had said, you know, in some of his talks, he would say, I consider myself to be a follower of Ambedkar and I consider his work to be my work. And those two things together just kind of were sort of echoing around in my mind, the image and also Subhuti's words. And you know, that has led me and inspired me to find out more about his life and his work. And I mean, we all know the outline, I'm sure everyone could tell it as well as I could, about the 1956 conversions and that kind of journey, if you like. But like all the best stories, it gets more inspiring and more fascinating the more you go into it. And if you haven't read Bhante's book, Ambedkar and Buddhism, it's a very good read. But also going back to Ambedkar's own writings, Ashwajit's published a very good little book a few years ago in which there's a transcript there of the conversion speech that Ambedkar gave in 1956, in which there's this very famous quote that I feel like I've been liberated from hell. It's a very strong quote. In fact, the rest of the quote kind of contextualises it a bit. He says something like, in 1935, I resolved that although I was born a Hindu, I would not die as one. Today, 21 years later, I have fulfilled that pledge. This conversion gives me great happiness. I feel as if I have been liberated from hell. And in fact, he just goes on after that to say, Buddhism does not... I'll just read this bit out. Buddhism does not want any blind followers. Those who want to embrace Buddhism should do so after careful thinking so that they hold on firmly to this religion for the future. Very strong words. I mean, when I read that, there's a kind of echo of Shantideva in there, like I've been reborn in the Buddha family. And I place no stain upon that spotless family. So, you know, Ambedkar is... I mean, he's a kind of like a genius. He had to think his way through all of this and these kind of this political environment. And he came to see, my understanding of it has just come through listening to Subhuti give these talks. But Subhuti would often describe how Ambedkar saw caste as a system of graded inequality. And the fact that caste, Ambedkar's great insight is that caste is in the mind. It's not a thing, it's not external. And that if you want to overcome the oppressiveness of it, you have to undergo a path of inner transformation. And that is what he saw in Buddhism. That's what he thought that Buddhism could offer. And in fact, one of Ambedkar's many criticisms of the Hindu culture was that it didn't demand this inner transformation. And... you know, one of his strongest reasons for Buddhism was that it required this ethical, this, you know, he called it a moral revolution. That's what he wanted. So, I mean, it's worth saying here as well, he had also had a very strong, positive critique, if you like, of Buddhism in terms of women. because he suggested that Dalit women were in a double bind of inequality. Firstly, as Shudras, as low caste women, and then as women, and that he thought it was very important for Buddhism that the Buddha had admitted women into the Sangha. And I think these two things is what our Sangha has been, one or two of the things that our Sangha in particular has been able to offer to India. That firstly, a path of training, a clear path of training that the ordination process offers. And then for women in particular, I mean, it's not only for women. I mean, it's just a path that gives dignity and confidence. But often Subhuti would talk about how important that has been for women. And meeting women order members in India, you can see that, how there's a kind of confidence and clarity which inspires all of the people around them. So one of the things that we thought we would do is ask Subhuti just to say a bit more about our Sangha, because he's been working with that very closely for the last 20 years. And he's also just come back from India on Monday, and he's been on a retreat in Delhi and working with some people who have just been ordained. So what I'm going to do is just hand over to Subhuti, and he's going to give a kind of more personal flavour, if you like, to our Sangha. Thank you.